Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is an in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is also available live via teleconference for public participation. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this hybrid meeting.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on the Rhode Island Housing website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff participating telephonically in this meeting, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask telephone participants to please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, Acting General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers speaking. This meeting is being held in hybrid fashion with all members of the Board of Commissioners appearing in person. In keeping with the Rhode Island Open Meetings Act and specific RI housing staff participating via teleconference. Members of the public may access this meeting in person or via teleconference according to their preference. In addition, members of the public can visit the RI housing website to view today's agenda and information on the actions being presented. In the event the teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until we can reconnect and audio is restored. Chairman Ritsinas will preside at today's meeting. Meeting participants, when you speak during the meeting, whether you are a board member appearing in person or staff communicating via telephone, please do state your name prior to speaking. This is to help members of the public listening in to better follow the proceedings. Now I'll turn it over to Chairman Ritsinas to call the meeting to order.
Thank you. Let me call the meeting to order. Let's start with a roll call attendance to be conducted by our Executive Director.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman Nicholas Ritsinas.
Here.
Director James Thorfson.
Here.
Director Liz Tanner.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Leanne Byrne.
Present.
Commissioner Kevin Orth.
Here.
Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thank you very much. The first item on the agenda is the approval. Second, any further discussion? Hearing none. Again, let's call the roll.
This is Corinne Myers. When I state your name, if you are in favor of approving the minutes of the board meeting held on August 19th, 2021, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Chairman Ritsinas?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
Director Tanner?
Aye.
Director Thorson?
Aye.
The motion is approved by a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's ask our Executive Director to prepare her, present her monthly report.
Thank you, Chairman. Continuing the good news out of our homeownership division, mortgage numbers are solid. Even with home prices rising sharply, our customers are still able to purchase homes. We had record volume and registrations in August. I think a lot of that has to do with our down payment assistance, which really helps our buyers get into home buying situation. Overall delinquency was down again in August, and we've seen over 50% of our delinquent borrowers reinstate due to stimulus relief or by using a loss mitigation option, which is terrific. Our development group closed 2 multifamily transactions in August, Pineview Apartments in Exeter and Sutton Place in East Providence, 2 communities where we haven't seen much affordable housing development recently, so it's terrific. Development staff issued an RFP for Building Homes Rhode Island, funding in collaboration with the HRC, and we've received over 30 proposals requesting more than $50 million. Our team has begun the underwriting process of the applications, and we hope to present recommendations to the HRC in November, which may allow us to get some foundations in the ground before the end of the year. I'm happy to report that our leased housing group was successful in receiving a $3.2 million HUD grant to build systems to end youth homelessness in Rhode Island. Our team will work with several partners across the state to implement a range of programs with this funding. The LEAF housing team is also deploying 117 emergency housing vouchers that we received in May. As you might imagine, lease-up is a bit slow, but we've hired a housing navigator to work with folks to recruit landlords for the program and to connect these folks together so people can move in quickly. We submitted our homeowner assistance fund program to Treasury for approval on August 19th, I believe. More than 1,200 households have registered on our landing page to receive updates on the opening of the program. I expect that the $50 million assistance we've received will go quickly. I'm going to pause here and have Christine Hunsinger provide an update on Rent Relief RI. Chris?
Good morning. This is Christine Hunsinger. Rent Relief has fully implemented the new flexibilities provided by Treasury. That includes using the QCT, Qualified Census Tract, as an income determination piece on eligibility. It includes streamlining the self-attestation form and not holding up applications that would otherwise be approved for small missing pieces of information. We are approving over $1 million in applications a day today, when the dashboard updates will be at roughly $28.5 million out the door, with over 3,600 families assisted and able to stay in their homes because of the program. We are doing extensive outreach and work with our community partners, as well as other nonprofits and departments within the state, like DCYF and DLT. Those organizations are getting trained on how to assist the folks already in contact with them, assist them in filling out applications to get more people into the program. So I'm happy to stop there, and if you have any questions, we can answer them.
I know this program is important to everybody at this table, so if you have questions, so Christine, let's hold my report and open it up. Director?
Chris, Jim Thorson, I had a question about the potential for rescission. There was some press about the funds reverting back to Treasury in the event that we weren't able to achieve sufficient utilization. Can you talk about that a little bit and give us an update on that?
Yep. We're in talks with the governor's office to come up with a plan that we would submit to Treasury once that deadline hits. So that deadline is September 30th of this year, where Treasury may, at its discretion, claw back any unused funds. We have indications from Treasury that they're going to ask for a reallocation plan and ask for an assessment of what funds we think we could spend with it, if we were allowed to keep them throughout the year. So we are working closely with the governor's office. We are sitting down later this afternoon to determine what that need analysis would look like and what a plan would look like. I just take this opportunity to remind everybody that the $200 million received for the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, ERA-1, was based on a small state minimum and not the formula that would be used and was used for larger states. So if they hadn't done a higher small state minimum, Rhode Island would have received roughly $76 million rather than the $200 million. So we think that that number is probably more in line with need and what we could spend, but we're working closely with the governor's office to come up with a plan to try to demonstrate that we would be able to spend it all.
Thank you.
Do you have charts like you had last month that show where things are at, or?
Those charts are on the Rent Relief RI website, but we can certainly pull them down and put them up on Board Docs and circulate them for everyone. Happy to do that.
Other questions?
Another question. This is Leanne. Christine, I just want to recognize again at this table that the treasurer and our team are very appreciative of the work that the team has done to streamline documentation, and in particular using Treasury's new guidance to quickly loosen up some of those requirements and use fact-based proxy for income. And so we are appreciative of that. Thank you.
Yep.
Are we still getting continuing complaints like we had some time ago, or do they seem to have settled?
So we have retrained the call center based on the Treasury flexibility. We are not receiving the same number of complaints at all. People seem to be very happy that they've been assigned one individual caseworker. there's a little bit of a hangover effect. So when people do complain, they reference the issues that they had in the past. But we are seeing much better performance out of the call center based on that retraining.
Thank you.
Chris, if I could, let me just say that Kim Ahern and I had a call with someone who does a lot of tenant-landlord dispute work, an attorney locally, who essentially corroborates what you said and said that we got off to a really bumpy start, but it seems to be working now in a way that's much more conducive to resolving these cases, and the backlog's getting worked off and people are getting paid. So it's a lot better than it was.
Yeah. I believe we've totally cleared the backlog, Director. Is that correct, Chris?
Yes. The backlog has been worked through. We've had a couple of them come alive as appeals. So when we moved them into inactive, they noticed and came back as an appeal. But all of those cases that were clogging up the works have been worked through. And you can see on the dashboard that we have made a huge dent in the number of folks we are chasing for information, and we're moving the new applications into assignment to a caseworker. And once that happens, those outreach efforts and hopefully completion of that application will happen within 10 days. So we are definitely much improved in moving fast.
It also helps that there's been a relationship formed, or relationships formed, between the attorneys and the folks that are actually in the courthouse. There's a greater familiarity that helps streamline the process, and that seems to help a lot.
Definitely.
Chris, are there any new roadblocks, or is everything running smooth at this point? Anything new to address, or is it working out okay?
No, I knock on wood, my superstitious nature. Everything seems to be working really well. We've got enough staff, in there approving applications and processing them, so the speed is there. We do feel like program integrity is still there, that we're able to monitor those and to, the extent that's feasible, catch funny business where it exists. So I think we're doing well. I would just, mention something you all know. There will always be complaints. The newest set of complaints are landlords that didn't want to participate that are now upset because the tenant is being paid directly. So it is not without issues because folks have opinions. But I think we're there.
And Chris, is there anything that we as board members can do to help you? I did see the email that came out about kind of pushing it out, so I put it out on all of my social media channels.
Thank you.
Is there anything else we can do to help?
No, I think, though, when you hear that like I said, there's a hangover effect, and folks who don't interact with it every day do have a negative impression of the program, and to just reiterate to them that it's better, that we've gotten better, we've vastly improved, and that it's working.
Thank you very much.
Good to hear.
Thanks.
Chris, I just have one quick question. I noticed that the material is available in English as well as Spanish. Does it make sense to expand that to more languages?
So the call center and our partners do field things in other languages and do so pretty well. The application itself inside the system is available in a multitude of languages. So far, I've only had one instance where we couldn't find someone to help someone in a language immediately. It took us about a week to find someone who spoke a very particular dialect of a African country. So I think we're okay, but we are always listening to our partners, and we do have at one of the eviction clinics coming up assistance in Creole and some other languages, so that the local community where we'll be setting up and taking applications, their needs are met.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions on rent relief? So lastly, Chairman, I want to remind the board that NCSHA will hold its NCSHB work session virtually on September 30th. You're all welcome to attend. Thank you for those of you that have indicated you're willing to attend. This year, I think, will be particularly important given everything happening on a national level and the funds that are streaming into Rhode Island. So I'll pause there, Chairman.
Just one more question on something you gave earlier, Carol, about the BHRI application.
Yes.
So as I understood it, there was a plan to only release a certain portion of the bond funding, but it sounds like there are many projects that have been submitted, and,
yes.
and obviously you're all still doing the work to determine whether they're quality, but is there flexibility in the amount that will be allocated in this round, depending on my preference is always more projects sooner, if
yeah.
possible, because
yeah.
people are outside. So
yeah, we are speaking with Commerce. We're speaking with Mike Tundra and his shop about, you know, the volume and what's coming in and what we could potentially fund. So I think there could be flexibility, provided there are projects that could move forward. I think there would be willingness on the HRC's part to fund more than the $15 million that was initially allocated.
Okay. Thank you.
Good report. Thank you. Thank you all. The next item on the agenda is the election of the vice chair of the board. It has been customary for the chairman to suggest the name for that. I have most commonly looked at directors of administration to reduce the friction between state government and Rhode Island Housing overall. So I'm looking for a nomination of a chair, hoping you just heard what I said.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Are there any further nominations that come before the floor? Hearing none, let's move a vote.
This is Corinne Myers speaking. When I call your name, if you're in favor of electing Director Thorson to the position of Vice Chair of the Board of Commissioners, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Chairman Ritsina.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne.
Aye.
Commissioner Orris.
Aye.
Director Tanner.
Aye.
The motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you.
You're welcome, I guess.
I hope I can fulfill the duties as I will try my best.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. Thank you.
Let us turn our attention to board action 5, the approval of the final 2022 qualified allocation plan. Ann Berman, are you online?
I am, Chairman.
Would you like to make the presentation?
Sure. Good morning. This is Ann Berman. Before you today is the final version of the 2022 qualified allocation plan. And as you may recall, the board approved a draft of this plan at the June board meeting. The final plan includes changes that resulted from both public comment as well as input from the credit committee in both August and September. I'm not going to go over each and every change, but I do want to highlight a few of the more substantive changes. As you're looking at this chart, you'll notice that we did increase the absolute total development cost cap from $385,000 to $390,000, and this is a result of a deeper dive into actual increase in construction costs. Our design and construction team looked at both existing projects that we are currently working on, as well as the RS means and some other industry data. And in general, the increase for each building is approximately 7%. And this is consistent with market changes that we have seen ranging from about 6.5% to about 6.8%. We did receive several comments requesting that we eliminate total development cost caps completely. However, we determined that this was really not prudent given concerns about cost constraints as well as the availability of resources. We did delete the requirement for 5 years of LIHTC experience for developers. There were several commenters who were concerned that the five-year requirement was a little too limiting and may have unfairly penalized developers who had significant real estate experience, both affordable and perhaps market through other programs such as Section 8, but may have not had direct LIHTC experience. We did review the requirements for the developer team capacity within the QAP and do believe that there are sufficient metrics aside from the five-year experience requirement for the team, and we will be able to evaluate whether the developer and their team have the requisite experience. So that is the reason for eliminating the requirement, the words 5 years of LIHTC experience. Jumping down the page here, we did also delete a proposed additional point category for larger units. Essentially, the commenters were concerned that that the incentive for larger units is actually already included as part of our weighted average calculation. Studies definitely have shown that we really need housing across all bedroom sizes and all income bands. So we did agree with comments and have elected to delete the points for larger units. At the request of the chairman, we went back and looked at points, trying to increase the points for fair housing. There are already approximately 13 points in the QAP for fair housing across several categories. But we looked at the points. We had added this year some GIS mapping data, and we've increased the points under this GIS mapping from 1 to 2 to boost the points for fair housing. And then finally, the other significant change was in the provision of free broadband to residential LIHTC units. We had a couple of robust conversations with credit committee. Our recommendation is to increase the points to 3 points for wireless access with free wireless access within the residential units, or 5 points if it's hardwired. And I do want to just give you a little bit of background about how we arrived at these points. We looked at more than 13 state QAPs, including all of the 5 New England states, to see what other states were doing to incentivize free broadband. And it's interesting, within New England, there's actually only one state that offers broadband, and it's Connecticut, and they offer 1 point for high-speed broadband. Virginia seems to offer the highest points. However, if you dig a little bit deeper, their QAP has a cumulative much higher point total than ours. In fact, in Virginia, you need 425 points just to pass threshold. So if you looked at the maximum points you could get for broadband under their QAP, it's less than 2%. And that percentage would obviously decrease as the point score jumped up. We also looked at some internal research we had done last year around costs associated and how that potentially affects the net operating income of each development. The recognition is that the technology is fairly, it's really in its infancy at this point and is changing really by the day. So after much conversation and review, we've made the determination that in order to really push the needle and do our best to incentivize the development of free broadband, we are recommending a wireless broadband access within each LIHTC deed restricted unit would generate 3 points, and hardwired access would generate 5 points, which are 2.2% of our total points, or 3.7%, depending on where you scored. We are going to require that the cost for broadband provision be reflected in the operating budget so we can really understand what the costs are. We're also going to require that the applicant include a written proposal for the provision of the infrastructure so we understand how it will work, and to make sure that the costs are properly accounted for as we're looking at the overall budget. And we are going to require a certification that the borrower provide the service for 15 years, which is essentially the term of the initial compliance period. There are some other changes we made here, but I will stop and pause and see if anybody had any questions. And if not, we do recommend the board approve this 2022 qualified allocation plan.
Chairman, if I may, this morning, Director Thorsten had asked for information on our voucher cap, and we've prepared this report on what our volume cap usage looks like. We don't necessarily associate the QAP heavily with the volume cap because it's not a competitive source in Rhode Island. It's not a competitive source for us, but we do monitor it closely. And Kara LaChapelle is on the line, and she can speak to what our usage has been. Kara?
Good morning. This is Kara LaChapelle. For the volume cap that we receive from the state, we receive an annual allocation, and that allocation gets split between our single-family volume or our single-family bond issuance and our multifamily bond issuance. So we have to estimate when we receive it, we have to submit to the IRS how much we think we'll use in each type of bond. So over the years, we have used all of the allocation that we get from the state. Other than in 2020, we did have some expiring volume cap in 2020, and that was due to, on the multifamily side, some deals we had anticipated being able to bond in the calendar year that fell over into the first quarter of 2021. So we did have a little bit of volume cap that expired last year. But historically, we have been able to use everything that the state allocates to us. We also have the ability to carry it forward for 3 years. So if we are given volume cap this year, we have an additional 3 years to use it so that the state as a whole does not lose all of the volume cap that they receive. There is not, at the state level, there are not many other issuers of private activity bonds, and so we tend to get the majority of the state allocation. Other housing authorities occasionally may ask for volume cap. The Commerce Corp may also use some, but it's not on an annual basis. Student Loan Authority uses some annually, but whatever is left over, the state allocates to Rhode Island Housing because they know we are able to utilize it. As Carol said, it's not necessarily a competitive process in Rhode Island because we do currently receive enough to issue bonds for all of the multifamily developments that would like funding. That may change in the future, but we monitor it closely, and we don't anticipate having to go to a competitive process at this point. And I'm happy to answer any other questions related to the volume cap.
The only thing I'll add is we do review and evaluate all of our proposals for tax-exempt financing against the criteria within the QAP. So we do that evaluation, even though it's not competitive.
Let's start with any questions for Kara.
Thank you for this. I've always been on the other end of my role in the Public Finance Management Board. In the allocation process and a long time ago in Treasury. So what I heard was is that you're satisfied with the process and its ability to meet your needs because it's clear that you're not bumping up against the cap and having an inability to order another bond issue if you needed to issue bonds. You're not constrained by the cap is what I'm saying. That's what I'm hearing. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. With respect to the changes, and if I could go back to the qualified allocation plan, the changes that I saw seems to make sense, and by definition, unanticipated consequences are unanticipated. So I don't imagine that you know what could happen. I just wanted to know that to the extent that you've made changes in the past, have there been unanticipated consequences? Because clearly we're in a changing, if not extraordinarily changing, environment with respect to where real estate prices are going. What's been your experience with changes to this plan in the past, and has it caused problems that you didn't anticipate? Is there anything we should be worried about? What are the risks?
Mm-hmm. Anne, would you like to speak to that?
Sure. It's a great question, Director. I would say in general, The changes have not resulted in anything too unanticipated. You know, I think there are a lot of states that are moving to a two-year QAP, which does help developers in terms of their planning process. We're not quite there yet. It is a goal of ours. But the changes that we've made are relatively minor. I would say about 3 years ago, we made more substantive changes when we moved from kind of a construction cost metric to the total development cost cap metric. And I actually think it's resulted in better proposals, more thoughtful proposals, where developers have paid more attention to the overall cost of the project, and in fact have elected in a couple of instances to not apply in a given year because they recognized that they really weren't ready. And rather than expending the dollars associated with the application process, they took their time, they did wait a year, and then they were successful in terms of getting funded. So I think overall it's been a good process. Because we're a small state, we really have pretty ready access to most of the stakeholders. We know, I wouldn't say all, but the majority of the developers who consistently develop affordable housing, and we have a pretty good open line of communication with them.
Thank you. Another question would be around broadband. It's interesting that we're trying to move the needle on broadband. If we had matching funds, would that, or some kind of a program where we could actually help with the cost of broadband, would that further move the needle? Is that something we could consider?
That would be terrific. I think the challenge, from my perspective, is really not necessarily on the infrastructure side. You know, these are expensive properties, so the cost of the, we're already requiring all of the wiring, and the cost can be capitalized. The challenge, I think, for many developers, and we'll see when we get this year's applications, is on the operating side, because it can have a fairly significant impact on the NOI. So, you know, potentially capitalizing an operating reserve that would cover the cost of the broadband, which could, you know, might be $30,000 or $40,000 a year, but if you've got a development with only 40 or 50 units with incomes capped and there's no Section 8, that could have a profound impact on their ability to leverage debt. So having an operating reserve that would cover the cost would be a game changer for some people, I think.
What would we need to do in order to put something like that together?
So we're working on it, right? There's millions and millions of dollars, opera funds that are available, and I know we've submitted proposals to do just this type of thing with those federal dollars. And I know that, you know, the Office of Innovation and Mike Tundra from the Office of Housing and Community Development just released an RFP to put more dollars out. I think it's $1.5 million. But certainly to scale something like this, you would be looking at probably, I don't know, $10 million in order to capitalize all of the developments across the state with an escrow that they could use to scholarship people who needed it within their developments. You know, I would defer to Commissioner Ort. He's already doing this at his development and providing these services to his folks. So, I mean, he's the prime example of what we'd like to see in Rhode Island.
Which turns us to Commissioner Orr. The credit committee did review this proposal for the qualified allocation plan. Can you comment on their comments?
Certainly. We didn't have a quorum at our last credit committee meeting, but we have had a lot, as Ann mentioned, we have had a lot of discussion over the last 2 months about the proposed changes. I'd like to say that we feel like the staff responded very thoughtfully and appropriately to all of the comments received. Declining some, but agreeing with others. So I think that was well done. Again, I think Ann hit hit all the highlights. You did a great job with the presentation, and I'd just like to add that the credit committee as a whole felt that providing broadband internet access is definitely a priority, and we want to make that statement here with the ability to get points for providing it, possibly in the near term future making it a requirement, and that also recognizing as Commissioner Thorson stated that there is a real cost to these developments, and so working to come up with some programs to assist the operators of the properties and also incentivizing maybe some innovation in the delivery of the services, I think would be great. And I know that we're also cognizant of other efforts at the federal level and the state level and also in the private sector of provisioning these services. So I think that continuing to be out there and making sure that we're, you know, in lockstep with other efforts out there would be critical. Mm-hmm. And that this is something that individual landlords can do, but it's so much better if there is a larger concerted effort behind it, because it's a little difficult to rope in a Comcast or a Cox or something if you say, oh yeah, I own five units, can you mm-hmm. give me a deal?
Right.
But if we say, yes, we have 12,000 units or 30,000 units, they really start to listen, especially if they have a, I don't know, monopoly or franchise agreement that's up for renewal or something like that. would be a good discussion time. And then also on fair housing, as Ann mentioned, that's another big priority for the committee members. And we just bumped up the one by 1 point, but all told, there's about 14 points, I believe, in that area. So I think really trying to push that as well. I think when we're only giving, you know, maybe 3-9% deals a year, it's kind of hard to really satisfy everybody. But I think that in years past, we've done a very good job of recognizing that we have urban areas that are in need of redevelopment and renovation, but also trying to push out into maybe areas of opportunity. So I think you've done a great job. It doesn't look like the minor changes we've done here is going to dramatically swing that around, but we only have 3 generally deals in the 9%. But hopefully, if we see anything like that happening, we have a lot of other buckets of funds that we can make use of. So again, we didn't have a quorum, so we didn't have a vote, but we do recommend, I think, as individual members of the committee to approve this.
And I will recommend, I will recognize that as a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Comments, discussion? Hearing none, let's take a roll call vote.
This is Corinne Meyer speaking. When I call your name, if you're in favor of approving the final 2022 qualified allocation plan as presented, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Chairman Racina.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne.
Aye.
Commissioner Orth.
Aye.
Director Tanner.
Aye.
Director Thorson.
Aye.
The motion is approved by unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we move on, let me echo the comments of Commissioner Orth. I brought these issues to the board late in the game. I apologize for that, but they've been very responsive and understand the direction we wanted to go in. We may not be at our destination, but I think we're heading in the right direction. So thank Ann Berman particularly and the whole staff for working on this. Let's move on to board action number 6, approval of delegation of corporate authority. I'd like to introduce our acting general counsel.
This is Corinne Myers presenting the 6th board action regarding signatory authority. This request for action is for the authorization of designated officers and employees to execute and deliver contracts, documents, or other instruments which may be entered into by RI Housing under its Enabling Act. The designation authorizes the chair, the executive director or her designee, the deputy executive director, and the chief financial officer to sign on behalf of the corporation. This designation will supersede any previous designation. Staff considers this a housekeeping matter. RI Housing's corporate signatory authority was last updated by the board in September 2020. We believe it's generally prudent and in the best interest of RI Housing to periodically update the corporate signatory authority to allow for any changes in title, staffing, or reorganization of functions. Our goal is to review and renew the authority on approximately an annual basis. We ask that this designation be approved by the board to allow for continued efficiency. I'm very happy to answer any questions you might have.
I do not believe the management committee met on this.
That's correct. We did not have a management committee meeting.
Therefore, I need a motion to approve.
Is
there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Any questions?
Just a quick question. Was there any change in either the employee designation from last year?
Thank you for asking, Commissioner Orth. There were no changes this year.
Let's call the vote roll.
This is Corinne speaking again. When I call your name, if you are in favor of approving the delegation of corporate authority as presented, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Chairman Racina?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
Director Tanner?
Aye.
Director Thorson?
Aye.
The motion is approved by unanimous vote. Thank you.
Board action number 7, approval appointment of MERS corporate signing officers. And Peter Pagonis is going to present this. Peter?
Good morning. This is Peter Pagonis. This RFA is for the appointment of signing officers for the purpose of membership in the Mortgage Electronic Registration System, also known as MERS. MERS owns and operates an electronic registry. Throughout the system, MERS tracks the servicing rights and ownership of mortgages throughout the country. MERS requires its members to name MERS as the mortgagee on each mortgage loan that it originates. Rhode Island Housing became a MERS member in 2016. As part of its membership each year, Rhode Island Housing obtains a corporate resolution from MERS, through which certain Rhode Island Housing employees are designated as MERS signing officers. And as part of that designation, are granted limited authority to perform certain actions such as discharges on behalf of MERS. The Board of Commissioners last updated Rhode Island Housing Corporate Signatory Authority on September 2020. Staff believes it is prudent and in the best interest of Rhode Island Housing to periodically update this Corporate Signatory Authority to allow for any changes in staffing and reorganization of functions. This RFA seeks approval of the following employees as MERS Corporate Signing Officers. The officers include the Chief Financial Officer, Assistant Deputy Director of Loan Servicing, Director of Home Ownership, and any Assistant Director of Home Ownership or Assistant Director of Loan Servicing. Thank you.
Just a quick question, if I could. Any risks associated with this?
There are not. This is basically an electronic system that replaces the need for assignments and paper assignments. And since moving into this arena in 2016, we've noticed a much more streamlined post-closing process, and certainly one where our investors and participating lenders appreciate much more.
Thank you.
Any further comments or questions?
Can you promote this online? Having it defines the person that has designation authority. How do you find the person who has the authority, if you're an attorney or a general public person?
They do have access to a certain portion of the MERS website where they can look up the MERS memberships, the members of MERS, excuse me.
Okay, great, thank you.
Any questions, comments? Hearing none, let's call the roll.
This is Corinne Meyer speaking. When I call your name, if you're in favor of approving the appointment of MERS corporate signing officers, please say aye. If you're opposed, say nay. Chairman Racina?
I recuse myself. I was one of the co-founders of MERS.
Notice?
I have no financial relationship.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
Director Tanner?
Aye.
Director Thorson?
Aye.
The ayes have it and the motion carries. Thank you.
There being no further business, I would request a motion to adjourn.
If I could indulge the board's attention, Jim Thorson. The week before Labor Day, the Department of Administration suffered a great loss with the unexpected death of Carol Cornelison, who was the head of Division of Capital Asset Management Maintenance. Her job was posted this week, and I wanted to announce that here because we're looking for somebody who has significant experience in real estate management, construction, and project management. So I wanted to make that announcement so that if anybody knows anybody who would be interested, please ask them to apply. We're looking for highly qualified candidates, of course. It'll be difficult to replace Carol, because of her wealth of experience and knowledge and breadth and depth of detail. So I just wanted to make that announcement and ask if you can forward to anybody who might be interested. We would really appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Again, there being no further business, a motion to adjourn would be in order.
So move.
Second. Moved and second. Any further comments? Hearing none, let's take a roll call.
This is Corinne speaking. When I call your name, if you're in favor of adjourning this meeting, please say aye. If you're opposed, say nay. Chairman Racines?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
Director Tanner?
Aye.
Director Thorson?
Aye.
Motion's approved by unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you.
We are now adjourned.